Pat and I disagree on the subject of a woman's head covering, but I have great confidence in Pat's honesty. I will strive to be as honest and open to correction as I think that Pat is. I truly hope that we will, after this discussion, and after we've had time to digest what is said, find ourselves in agreement. My objective in this debate is not to convince women to put away their head coverings. There are women in the congregation where I am a member who wear the artificial head covering as a part not just of their attire in worship, but of their daily attire. I do not and I will not try to discourage them from this innocent practice. My concern is that we recognize that the practice of the woman wearing an artificial covering on her head is a custom which, though certainly allowed as a liberty, is not universally bound. Thus, the proposition I am affirming reads, the Scriptures teach that the covering of 1 Corinthians 11, verses 2 through 16, is a matter of custom. By Scriptures, I mean the 66 books of the Bible, of course, but with the recognition that the New Testament is our law today, whereas the Old Testament prepared the way for and helps us to understand the New. The kind of covering discussed in 1 Corinthians 11 is not relevant to this discussion. But I hasten to add that Pat and I agree the passage includes both hair and artificial man-made coverings. The word custom found in 1 Corinthians 11, 16 means habit, usage, or practice. The only other biblical usage of this word, John 18, verse 39, is of a customary practice not demanded by law. In John 18, 39, Pilate inquired of the Jews, quote, "But you have a custom that I should release someone to you at the Passover. Do you therefore want me to release to you the King of the Jews?" Thus, I am affirming that the wearing of a head covering, as Paul discusses in 1 Corinthians 11, 2 through 16, is a matter of cultural practice not bound by divine law. Now please read with me 1 Corinthians 11, verses 2 through 16. I am reading from the New King James Version. "Now I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the traditions just as I deliver them to you. But I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ, the head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head. But every woman who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head. For that is one and the same as if her head were shaved. For if a woman is not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it is shameful for a woman to be shorn or shaved, let her be covered. For a man indeed ought not to cover his head, since he is the image and glory of God. But woman is the glory of man. For man is not from woman, but woman from man. Nor was man created for the woman, but woman for the man. For this reason, the woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head, because of the angels. Nevertheless, neither is man independent of woman, nor woman independent of man in the Lord. For as woman came from man, even so man also comes through woman. But all things are from God. Judge among yourselves, is it proper for a woman to pray to God with her head uncovered? Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it is a dishonor to him? But if a woman has long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given to her for a covering. But if anyone seems to be contentious, we have no such custom, nor do the churches of God." I've given Pat the following questions. I'm going to read the questions at this time, but I have Pat's answers already, but I'm going to reserve dealing with those in my second speech. Question 1, was it shameful for a Jewish man to have long hair? Question two, was it shameful for a Jewish woman to have her hair, her head shaved? Question three, could a Jewish male pray with his head covered? Question four, must we wash each other's feet? Question five, must we greet each other with a kiss? I think Pat and I agree on several points. We agree that Paul gives three universal relationships in verse 3 that are binding on this earth until Christ returns. Christ is the head of man, man is the head of the woman, and God is the head of Christ. These relationships are universal. They apply in all societies. They are not changed by culture, and they are unchanging throughout time on earth and are bound by divine law. We also agree that Paul taught women in Corinth to wear both long hair and an artificial covering. I don't believe that verse 6 can be otherwise explained without perverting the text. We agree that these requirements were not limited to spiritually gifted women. In verse 5, Paul enjoined the head covering for women in Corinth when they prayed or prophesied. I do believe prophesying always involves inspiration, but prayer certainly does not, nor can it be proven that the context demands it. Even if it did, the spiritual principle involved would apply to all women in that society. Finally, we agree that women in Corinth had to have an artificial covering on their heads outside the worship assembly as well as in it. The public worship assembly is neither mentioned nor implied in 1 Corinthians 11:2 through 16. Furthermore, according to 1 Corinthians 14:34 and 35, women could not prophesy in the assembly when men were present. The passage states, quote, "Let your women keep silent in the churches, for they're not permitted to speak, but they're to be submissive, as the law also says. And if they want to learn something, let them ask their own husbands at home, for it is shameful for women to speak in the church," or in church. Assuredly, prayer is not limited to the public assembly. Woman's subjection to man has been true from the beginning and is universally bound. Moses wrote, quote, "To the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you." Genesis chapter 3, verse 16. If the woman's head covering as a symbol of subjection to man is equal in extent to that submission, then the veil also has been universally required throughout time. I want to repeat that statement. If the woman's head covering as a symbol of subjection to man is equal in extent to that submission, then the veil also has been universally required throughout time. But in the day of the patriarch Judah, the veil was a symbol of prostitution. I quote from Genesis 38, verses 13 through 15. "And it was told Tamar, saying, 'Look, your father-in-law is going up to Timnah to shear his sheep.' So she took off her widow's garments, covered herself with a veil, and wrapped herself and sat in an open place which was on the way to Timnah. For she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given to him as a wife. When Judah saw her, he thought she was a harlot, because she had covered her face." In the time of the prophet Ezekiel, the head covering signified false prophecy and magic. The Lord commanded Ezekiel, and I quote from Ezekiel 13, verses 17 and 18, "Likewise, son of man, set your face against the daughters of your people, who prophesy out of their own heart. Prophesy against them and say, 'Thus says the Lord God,' Woe to the women who sew magic charms on their sleeves and make veils for the heads of people of every height to hunt souls. Will you hunt the souls of my people and keep yourselves alive? End quote. Again, the Lord warned, and now in Ezekiel 13, verse 21, I will also tear off your veils and deliver my people out of your hand. And they shall no longer be as prey in your hand. Then you shall know that I am the Lord. God's law has taught women to be in submission to their own husbands everywhere and in every age. But the Lord never required women to be veiled in either the patriarchal system or the Mosaic. I believe the inspired apostle in our text took a universal principle, feminine subjection to man, applied it to a cultural question at Corinth, the artificial head covering, and used arguments based both on eternal truths and cultural custom to uphold this application. This is the normal way in which the apostle taught. For example, in 1 Corinthians 9, verse 19, Paul stated a universal truth. For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win the more. End of quote. He then made applications to matters that were customary cultural liberties. Quote, to the Jews I became as a Jew. End quote. And quote, to those who are without law, as without law. End quote. Verses 20 through 23. The principle remains unchanged, but the application depends on the customs of the culture. It is certainly true that in 1 Corinthians 11, 7 through 12, the apostle states four permanent facts to bolster his demand that women in Corinth cover their heads. This is simply as in chapter 9, verses 19 through 23, application of universal principles to cultural customs. But in 1 Corinthians 11, verses 5 and 6, and verses 13 through 15, the apostle appeals to culture to support his argument. In verse 6, he argues that if it is shameful for a woman to have her hair shorn or shaven, it is shameful for her to pray without an artificial head covering. Three things for a Corinthian woman were equally shameful. They stood or fell together: having her hair shorn or shaven, and praying without an artificial head covering. Is it universally shameful for a woman to have her hair shaved or shorn? Conversely, is it always dishonorable for a man to have long hair? Numbers chapter 6, verses 1 through 21 record the Jewish law of the Nazarite vow. Verse 2 states that a man or woman could take the vow. Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when either a man or a woman consecrates an offering to the Lord, to take the vow of a Nazarite to separate himself to the Lord, end quote. Now I'm reading from the old King James Version at this point, which I think is clearer than the new King James, and I quote, all the days of the vow of the separation, there shall no razor come upon his head until the days be fulfilled, in the which he separateth himself unto the Lord, he shall be holy, and shall let the locks of the hair of his head grow, end quote. Verse 18 demands that at the end of the vow, the Nazarite was to shave his head. Quote, then the Nazarite shall shave his consecrated head at the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and shall take the hair from the consecrated head and put it on the fire which is under the sacrifice of the peace offering, end quote. Thus in Israel, all, both men and women, could let their hair grow long and could shave their heads. According to verse 8, rather than being shameful or dishonorable, the Nazarite was holy to the Lord, quote, all the days of his separation, he shall be holy to the Lord, end quote. According to Judges 13, verses 5 and 7, the Lord commanded that Samson be a Nazarite his entire life. The angel of the Lord spoke thus to the wife of Manoah, quote, for behold, you shall conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come upon his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines, end quote. We know from Judges 16, verses 16 through 19, that his uncut hair as the sign of a Nazarite was the secret to his great strength. Among Jews, it was neither shameful nor dishonorable for men to have long hair and for women to have their heads shaved. And of course, Absalom's remarkably long, luxuriant hair was a special mark of the signal of his signal masculine good looks. There was no man in Israel so handsome as Absalom. And yet his hair grew so long that when he cut it at the end of each year, it weighed 200 shekels. Different scholars say that's somewhere between 3 and 6 pounds. I could only be jealous. Among Jews, it was neither shameful nor dishonorable for the men to have long hair and for women to have their heads shaved. Nor did a Jewish male dishonor the Lord if he worshipped with an artificial covering on his head. According to Leviticus 16, 3 and 4, the priests had to wear a turban, that's what the New King James calls it, on their heads to come into the holy place to minister before the Lord. But what about 1 Corinthians 11, 14? Paul inquired, does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it is a dishonor to him? The primary meaning of nature is the native sense of propriety. But its secondary meaning is a mode of feeling and acting which by long habit has become nature. The word is used in the secondary sense in Ephesians 2, 3, where the Apostle Paul talks about those who were by nature children of wrath. No one is born a child of wrath. Both Jew and Gentile had long established sinful practices. The fact that Jewish men wore long hair with divine approval and wore an artificial covering in worship by the Lord's command, and that Israelite women could shave their heads with the sanction of God, proves that nature is used in 1 Corinthians 11, 14, not of the native sense of propriety, but of a mode of feeling and acting which by long habit has become nature. The apostle was appealing to a long-established custom in Corinth by which women signified their submission. Thus, in verse 16, Paul simply states he is dealing with a custom. But if anyone seems to be contentious, we have no such custom, nor do the churches of God. The apostle could have used the Greek term ethos here for custom, which does include the idea of custom established by law. Instead, he used the word synetheia, which has no such signification. But is he speaking of the custom of being contentious? Contentiousness is a sin, not a custom, a matter of cultural practice, not bound by divine law. Furthermore, what good would it do to reply to the charge of being contentious by simply denying it? That would be contentious in and of itself. Is he stating we have no such custom as the women going without a head covering? Well, in fact, the Jews, and Paul was a Jew, did have divine approval for men wearing long hair, men covering their heads in worship, and women shaving their heads. And this would still make the woman's head covering a matter of custom. I want to deal later on, I don't have time in this speech, I see, to deal with the New American Standard translation. I don't think this will be an issue between Pat and me, but I would like to introduce this because of the peculiar translation that's found in the New American Standard, the New International Version, and the Revised Standard Version, which I think obscures the meaning of 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 16, but I'll have to deal with that later. And thus, since I'm going to be running out of time, and I know that I'm going to bring this to a close quickly, what makes the practice of women wearing an artificial head covering, and deal with the matter of kissing, thank you, the matter of the holy kiss, and the matter of foot washing, and ask you to think about the fact that these, I believe, are perfectly parallel to the wearing of a head covering. And if one of the three is bound, all of the three should be bound. And I'll have more to say about that later as well. But what makes the practice of women wearing the head covering peculiar from the other two is that it is the only one of the three practices which the inspired record specifically calls a custom. Thus I conclude, the Scriptures teach that the covering of 1 Corinthians 11, verses 2 through 16, is a matter of custom. If a woman is constrained by her conscience to cover her head, let her do so. Let no one bind his or her conscience on another. Let all that you do be done with love. I'm through.